not just at Halloween that the flesh eaters come out. Those who fancy the taste of decomposing corpses are among us all year long. See the blood on their plates, the stench of seared flesh on their bacon sandwiches, the chicken fat on their lips. Escape now! Run screaming from the curse of the meat eaters! Heart attack, cancer, stroke! Save yourself and all those animal lives! Go vegan now! Free recipes at PETA.org.
The goal, let's get it on. Yo, what up, yo? This is Ghostface. You're listening to WMFO Medford 91.5. Y'all know what it is, one. With coke and a dollar bill, stems and crack capsules. Take a blast.
The Durango 95 purred away real horror show. A nice, warm, vibratory feeling all through your gutty woods. Soon it was trees and dark, my brothers. With real country dark.
Afraid, honey? Well, why don't you come with me? Oh, I'll sing you a song till your mom comes back. God is here, his holy name. Earthly thoughts, be silent now.
Whenever you come in here and interrupt me, you're breaking my concentration. You're distracting me. And it will then take me time to get back to where I was. Understand?
Starting this fall on Irrational Public Radio, we all know our neighbors, our coworkers, the kid who makes our bagel sandwich. But what about that guy who yells at birds? The woman responsible for smearing garbage in your child's hair? American Mavericks reveals the stories of people who've taken the road less traveled.
So, you're like a stabber, like you literally stab people.
I have, yes.
Like, I'm just trying to understand, because, you know, you see people on TV stabbing people, but it's pretend. Mm. But you do it for real. Is that okay to say?
No, that's...
Sorry. I mean, I don't want to be that girl who's all like, oh, you shouldn't stab people, but
yeah.
You shouldn't, right?
Is
that...
Okay? Yeah, that's totally legit. I've killed, like, over, like 16 people, but one of those that I actually stabbed actually fell off a bridge, and that's what actually killed him, so I don't...
Oh, right, so it's... So right.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, do you count that?
Exactly.
So wait... Do you have a special stabbing knife?
No. Yeah, a lot of people, just whatever's around and you know, sturdy.
Right, I was going to say, because otherwise then they see you coming with your big bloody stabbing knife and they're just like,
look out, it's that stabbing guy.
And you're more than that, I'm sure.
Thank you, yes. I have I stabbed people? Yes, I have to own that, because it's a choice that I made a bunch of times. But I'm sick of being just the guy who stabbed a whole bunch of people. I also, you know, I run a knife sharpening business. I collect other people's blood. I make my own barbecue sauce. There's a lot to me if you get to know me.
I'm sure that's true. I mean, I wish more people would take the time.
Well, a lot of them end up stabbed.
Oh, I'm sorry. You sound very brave.
Thank you.
American Mavericks, Wednesdays at 4 and again at 4.
my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away. Oh, psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. My name is Chris Earle, and my co-host is Derek Gary. Happy Halloween.
It's Halloween week. This is our time to shine, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for horror movies, yes. Horror movies are all year, but Halloween is only once a year. So you really got to get in those really good horror movies on Halloween, or you're not a horror fan.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
It's whichever ones you like the best.
Yeah.
Whichever ones...
This is very foreboding.
Whichever ones you still find spooky and scary.
Yes.
Should be on the playlist this weekend.
Yeah. I brought in my giant binder, okay? I started a Fright Fest in the year 2000. Before that, I did something called a Silly Fest. For 2 years, I ran just little parties at my house, and they were comedy movies. And my friends and I would get together, and we'd drink, and we'd watch, like, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the Big Lebowski. You know, some Stooges stuff. And then all of a sudden in the year 2000, I decided I'm going to do a Halloween party.
There you go.
And I've been doing that every year for 22 years. So this would be year 22. And the crowd numbers, the numbers in the crowd have changed, but the party is still very similar to when I first started it, which is show anywhere from 12 to 20 hours of movies. And then have a little dress-up party, have a costume party,
sure,
and have some drinks and have some food. Preferably some hot stuff like hot chicken or whatever.
Nice.
And it's been fun.
I know. I've been going to those things for well over a decade.
Yeah, quite some time.
COVID put a damper on it, as it did so many other things.
Yeah. So I got a big binder here with all the different movie lineups from over the years. And I'm going to pick some of those for this weekend for people to put their own little party together.
That's all. Yeah. Because if you've got nothing else to do, or if you're still hiding at home, just spend an afternoon and a night watching horror movies.
Yes.
You got Saturday. You got Sunday. Monday, the little goblins will be knocking on your door.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really watch the movies while the trick-or-treating is happening. Because it's one of two things happens. Either they knock on the door in a scene you really want to see and you're annoyed with them.
Right.
Or you're really into the movie and someone knocks on the door and you're like reaching for a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the kind of treat the kids are looking for.
No. There's a couple of things that happen in Halloween Kills. I think let's jump over to a little review of Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends, because I'm very excited about talking about these two movies.
Nice.
And we'll shelve everyday horrors for a moment. Halloween Kills, we both saw it this past week.
We did.
And I think you probably liked it a little bit more than me.
There are a lot of things that I like about it. There are a lot of things that didn't quite work for me.
How did you feel about Anthony Michael Hall?
Anthony Michael Hall, I thought, was great.
Okay. All right. I thought he was acting. I could tell he was acting the whole time, but I liked the fact that he was there. I liked the character of Tommy coming back.
Yeah. So, for those of you who haven't seen it, this is the follow-up to 2018's Halloween reboot.
Yes.
Which was not received well by the fans.
Including me. I didn't like it at all.
And David Gordon Green is the director of these movies. It looks like for Halloween Kills, they got the message.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want a female empowerment Michael Myers movie. We don't need three generations of the Strode girls in a weird compound trying to kill Michael Myers.
Right.
That's not what the audience came for.
Which is what happens in 2018's Halloween, and that's really all it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And I will tell you that if you haven't seen that movie, you can probably skip it and go straight from Halloween to Halloween Kills.
I can agree with that, yeah.
Because other than some references at the beginning to what happened, which you'll pick up on even if you haven't seen it, it is a direct sequel to Halloween.
Yes.
And it is sort of the middle-aged version going back to the town that was destroyed by Michael Myers, you know, 34 years ago, or 44 years ago.
Right.
And seeing what became of everybody.
Yeah, it's more about the town of Haddonfield versus Laurie Strode this time. And she's mostly in the hospital, kind of playing Dr. Loomis this round with her pontifications of what evil is.
Yeah, and Dr. Loomis shows up in this as well.
Yep.
So they bring everybody back. Sheriff Braxton is back.
Mm-hmm.
He's the chief of security at the hospital now. And a lot of it is about how this town was just destroyed by Michael Myers and how the lives of the survivors were destroyed by Michael Myers.
Yeah, it's kind of a PTSD movie.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
And in that sense, it works. And there are some sequences in the film that I will put side by side with the stuff that John Carpenter did back in the day.
Yep.
Because they're effective. And they're very clearly emulating John Carpenter's technique.
Mm-hmm.
Carpenter was involved in it. He's an executive producer. So I think they leaned on him a little bit and said, how do we do this? How do we do that? Because it feels very much like a continuation of those first two Halloween films.
It does.
Where it goes wrong, in my eyes, is there's way too much stuffed into it.
Okay.
Like, Jamie Lee Curtis is here, but she's kind of a side character in a movie that you think is going to be about her.
Right. Yeah. That's what I had a fault with that. Absolutely. She's in the hospital most of the movie.
Yeah. She's in the hospital for the few minutes that she's on screen. She's in the hospital.
And the dialogue that she gets is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Coming from Dr. Loomis was kind of spooky, but with Jamie Lee Curtis, it's laughable, a lot of the stuff that she says. It's like, come on.
And there's a reason why she's in the hospital, and there's a little bit of a callback to Prometheus,
mm-hmm.
and things that happen at the end of Prometheus.
Right.
That ground that in reality. And if you know what happens in Prometheus and you see what happens here, it's like, oh, you're riffing on that. So that's what would actually happen in this situation.
Yeah, so the beginning of the movie, Michael Myers, at the end of the reboot of Halloween, has been put into a trap, into the house, right? Isn't it his main house? Isn't it the regular house?
It's Jamie Lee Curtis's house.
It's Jamie Lee Curtis's house.
Yeah, it's Laurie Strode's house.
That's right. Yeah, and she creates a trap in there.
She knows that Michael is coming for her, so she has built this elaborate survivalist compound.
But not only that, she invites her daughter and her granddaughter and puts them at risk in order to burn Michael Myers alive
in
this trap.
You know, right. if you really want Michael to come out, get all the Strode girls to join in.
Yeah.
And her mother is wearing a Christmas ugly sweater for some reason. Like, Laurie Strode's daughter is like,
yeah.
I don't know why she's wearing the Christmas sweater and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's explained in Halloween. It's stupid. That was not a good film.
I didn't think so either. I got a good news for you. I liked the last one the best. And the last one, I'll talk about Halloween Ends in a minute. But some of the problems I had with Halloween Kills is it's very sadistic. I mean, every single character is like knifing or, you know, knifing somebody or hurting somebody in some way. They're all just very vicious. And afterwards, they're like cutting jokes and stuff. It's kind of bizarre, you know?
It's very much
a movie. It's very much a horror movie. You're watching a horror movie, and you know that the whole time.
It's a movie that wants to deliver a lot of fan service.
Yeah.
And in some respects, it works, and in some respects, it doesn't. There's a sequence around the midpoint of the movie. Or no, it's actually pretty early on in the movie. I'm not spoiling anything by telling you this, because if you've seen the first one, you know that Michael Myers is in a burning house. Well, the fire department shows up.
Right.
And Michael Myers is in the burning house. And there is a scene where Michael Myers squares off against seven firefighters.
Right.
And they're armed with a chainsaw and axes and all the rest of this.
Yeah.
We are supposed to cheer for Michael Myers in that scene.
Sure, it's fan service, yeah.
But what Michael Myers is doing is killing a bunch of first responders who are out doing their job of putting out a fire.
Right.
And I don't think whoever wrote that scene thought that through.
Right, right.
Because when you watch it in the moment, it's like, oh, Michael's going to go crazy and Michael's going to kill everybody. And he does. And then you think about it later on and you're like, why did we just kill 9 firefighters?
Well, they had to show the firefighters show up for him to survive.
But why couldn't you just have the house burn and then Michael's not there?
Okay.
Why are we killing 9 innocent firefighters, first responders, who most of us...
You have some body count to slash a movie.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's to up the body count.
Yeah.
And if you think about the genesis of this scene, it goes back to Terminator and the scene directed by a friend of mine, by the way, where Terminator takes out the police station.
Yeah. Very funny that you say that, because a lot of the third movie, Halloween Ends, reminded me of T2,
too. Yeah, because they borrowed very heavily from that.
Yeah.
The reason that scene exists in Terminator is to help us as an audience understand that nothing is going to stop this machine. In this community, and keep in mind that movie came out in 1984, the police are going to be the best armed, most organized resistance that the Terminator is going to face. He walks in and destroys a police station in a matter of minutes.
Right.
It is there to terrify you, and it is a terrifying scene. It really is a frightening scene when you sit down and watch it. This scene in Halloween Kills is just there to make you cheer for Michael killing people.
Yeah, I can. I guess I can agree with that, sure.
We don't need to know that Michael's unstoppable. We know that he's unstoppable. And so we're going to sacrifice, you know, nine people who came out to try and save lives. That's their job, is to save lives and put out fires just so that we can up the kill count. That rubbed me the wrong way.
All right.
And my other criticism of the film is, at times it just gets silly. There's a whole thing where the whole town is in the hospital and everybody's freaking out and everybody's running around all over the place. And why is any of this happening?
Right.
Why is this in the movie? There's a sheriff character in the film who doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, well, he actually shows up more in Halloween Ends.
I know.
Yeah.
But he's in this film, he's basically there to be yelled at by the townspeople. Why aren't you doing anything?
Yeah.
And we're going to take the law into our own hands.
You do see a little bit of that, let's give everybody a role that we've seen in Hollywood movies the last few years, you know? But I'm giving it a marginal thumbs up. I thought it was a little too sadistic. I thought a lot of the stuff just goes really a little too far. Like the Lenny Clark scene with his wife there. I mean, it is fun to see Lenny Clark get hit in the head against the window a bunch of times.
Come on, this is Boston. We got to be all over this.
But that whole scene's pretty silly, too. I mean, you could also say that, like, well, why are we putting Lenny Clark in the movie, you know?
Yeah.
So we can see him, with all the stuff happening with, you know, with Will Smith and Chris Rock, you know, we can't have another comic getting killed on screen.
Yeah.
But there's parts of it that I liked. The Judy Greer character, I don't really care about her that much. And also the granddaughter, even less than the first movie, is like, okay, what is she in this for?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the fact that she's Laurie Strode's granddaughter. They gave her a much bigger role in Halloween Ends.
The Ezra Miller lookalike did nothing for me. He's a disposable character. It was interesting, one of the characters in this, that the Ezra Miller lookalike's father, I don't even know the actor's name, I don't care to, because he's there because he looks like Ezra Miller. But his father is Lonnie, who in first film is the one that Dr. Loomis scares away from the Myers house.
Yes.
And
well, that's also one piece that I really liked about it. In the very beginning, they show Anthony Michael Hall, and he's doing like a performance, like an open mic.
Yeah.
And he's talking about the meaning of Halloween from 40 years ago and what Michael Myers did to Haddonfield. And the people that are there are like the nurse from the first Halloween movie that got away, Tommy, who is the one that was babysat by Laurie in the first movie.
Lindsay.
Lonnie and Lindsay. Yep. So you have like a lot of these characters come back, and they're in their middle age. And you think, you know, they're just going to be body counts. But for the most part, yes and no. I mean, it does do. There is some actual story in here, and there is some kind of clever things. But I think the last movie that everybody's been kind of crapping on, I thought was great. They introduce on Halloween Ends. This just came out. You can get it on Peacock. It's in the movie theater, and you can also get it on Peacock. So if you have Xfinity, Peacock app is free. Halloween Kills is on HBO, and I think it's available on a bunch of other things right now, too. So Halloween Kills, marginal thumbs up for me. A pretty good thumbs up for you?
I give it a pretty good thumbs up.
I give it a B-minus, pretty much.
If you are of a certain age and you grew up with Halloween, this is kind of the movie that you wanted.
Yeah.
The problem with it is, as Chris says, it's sadistic in places. It's a movie that's racking up a body count for the sake of racking up a body count. But there are also parts of it that are really effective, parts of it that are really scary. One of the details that I love about it, by the way, if you're going to do representation, because everybody's all about representation, a gay couple bought the Myers house.
Yeah, I loved that part, actually.
Brilliant.
I thought they were two of the best new characters in the movie. They were great.
A gay couple bought the Myers house, and the kids are hassling them. And they're running around, chasing the kids around, like, do you know whose house this was? And then Michael eventually shows up.
Yeah.
That whole storyline was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought they were really good.
I think ultimately there's enough in the film that's enjoyable and on point if you're a Halloween fan for you to have a great time with it. There's a couple of things that, you know, especially if you're not into the really heavy gore, heavy body count side of these movies, you're probably not going to enjoy as much.
There was nothing in Halloween Kills where I went, oh my God. In Halloween Ends, there were at least four spots in the movie where I'm like, oh my God. I was just completely surprised at where it went. And that's why I think Halloween Ends is the best of the three for these remakes. What it does is it doesn't show Michael Myers a whole lot. So at the end of Halloween Kills, that's another sadistic moment, but at the end of Halloween Kills, they get rid of Michael Myers in a junkyard. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
They get rid of him, and the whole town comes and watches him go. In Halloween Ends, they haven't seen him in a few years. So it's actually set, like, I think 4 to 6 years in the future. It mostly follows...
Wait, it's not a nuclear wasteland?
No.
Everyone it does. Still everyone hasn't died of COVID?
Yeah, it still hadn't failed.
We're going to have it 6 years from now. I'm excited.
And the granddaughter now is a nurse, and she works at the hospital. And she meets this boy who has, on Halloween night from the previous film, from Halloween Kills, makes a mistake. That's the best way to put it. So he is not wrongfully accused. He's accused. Yeah, I mean, he's accused of murdering someone. And that's not giving away anything. He's accused of murdering someone. And the lead in to Halloween Ends is probably one of the best lead ins I've seen in a movie in years. I thought it was great. I was really surprised at the way, because I thought, OK, this is kind of like this woke moment, whatever. And it's like, no, it's very clever. And they show this kid and the repercussions of being a teenager, making a mistake, what it actually does to you. So he's sitting here and he's suffering now from being accused of something, but also still having to live in Haddonfield with all these other people who were surrounded by this killer and terrorized for years.
Right.
So what do they think of him?
Right.
So he slowly builds up to become the personification of evil that Michael Myers is. And at one point, Michael Myers meets up with him and they have a relationship. Let's put it that way. And a lot of the film covers this new character, but the new character is pretty good. And there's a lot of the T2 stuff in it, like we were talking about. As a matter of fact, he has a motorcycle. And of course, Laurie Strode's granddaughter, she starts to fall in love with the guy. Because she feels bad for him, becomes kind of a project, and wants to be in his life.
Ladies, stay away from the project
boyfriend.
They
always go for the bad boys.
Yeah, stay away from the project boyfriend. It does not work.
And there's a few things in here that's just great. And Jamie Lee Curtis, she's not the crazy person that we saw in the reboot, and she's not the semi-crazy philosophical person we see in the second one. In the third one, she's kind of an older lady who's trying to settle in and get rid of all the bad things that have happened in her life.
Sure.
And try to enjoy things and try to move forward. And she's very good in it. And there's a couple of spots that are gory, but not as gory as Halloween Kills. And there were literally, like I said, four things that I'm like, oh my God, that is either so cool or that surprised me so much. And at the end of the film, there's things that go back to the very first movie, and there's things that you would think at this point they were cherry-picking a lot of stuff from that first movie and there was nothing left. There's two scenes in there that I'm like, that is awesome.
Nice.
I'm so glad they did that. And I really liked it. I thought it was the best one out of the three.
Ben Tramer's not still walking around, is he? Because he died in two.
Who's that again?
the one that Jamie Lee has, or Laurie Strode has the crush on. Who gets killed by the car early on.
He is not in number three. But we do get to see a couple of characters from two come back.
That's great.
From Halloween Kills come back. And you also see other characters from the original Halloween come back. So, and I really do think that Blumhouse ended it on a pretty high note. They did a really good job considering that it's three completely different movies. In my opinion, they're three completely different horror movies.
The second one is definitely sort of the Empire Strikes Back like sequel, and has a lot of that sequel like second part of the trilogy mentality about it.
Well, except the heroes actually win.
Yeah.
Instead of the dark side winning. The heroes actually win.
They do
and
they
end
don't.
Of Halloween Kills.
You know, there are consequences, and you, when that movie ends, you feel that there are consequences for everybody involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the heroes go down. fighting Michael Myers too. And it's interesting because it's sort of that, it's that middle film in the trilogy, but the first film failed. So we're going to course correct.
Yeah.
And what I liked about it was the course correction. You know, the T2 thing is spot on, or the Terminator thing is spot on. That the influence of those films is all over these.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were good. I mean, considering, you know, they had the rights for three movies, I think they did what they could with the three movies, because Blumhouse creates a lot of crap too.
Yeah, well, the Blumhouse model is basically the old Roger Corman model.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to spend $1 million on this movie.
Yep,
it's going to be what it is. We're going to spend another $1 million marketing it. It's going to make $6 million. That gives us $2 million to go make the next movie, and then we pocket the other $4 million.
Right.
So they're not necessarily interested in producing high quality horror. But depending on who you get in, who's making that movie for you, you might wind up with something that becomes a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if $1 million will buy you, you know, $1 billion box office success, they'll keep repeating that all day long.
Yeah.
I think Blumhouse has always been true to those sort of indie, you know, low budget cinema roots.
Yeah.
And Jason Blum as a producer clearly has an understanding and a love of horror films.
Yeah.
And what I see in what they've done with Halloween is really that respect for horror and that respect for the traditions of horror.
Yeah.
We're going to update it. We're going to give you what the modern audience wants, but there's still going to be a lot here that people who love the classics, people who grew up with these movies, are going to enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, for this one, for Halloween Ends, I'm going to give it B+.
Nice.
Yeah. It's one of the best horror movies I've seen in a few years. I loved it. I thought it was great. I was really surprised. I'm like, oh, everybody's crapping all over this. And the thing is you really can't look at Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb anymore. You can't. I learned that at Last Jedi. You know, it's like everybody's saying, oh, Last Jedi best since Empire Strikes Back, AA-. And I'm watching. I'm like, what did everybody watch? I'm like, it wasn't people my age watching that. And I'll tell you that. Because we were like, they threw away Star Wars. That's another story altogether.
The problem with Rotten Tomatoes is once upon a time, the idea of, you know, an audience-driven movie review site was a good thing. Over the years, it's become a place where studios and marketing agencies hire people for a penny a post to go in and write the same thing over and over again.
Sure.
And try and manipulate the score. And then they market based on the score. It's just a bunch of marketers sitting around.
Yeah.
Arguing with each other over whether a movie is good, and the movie itself probably isn't.
Yeah. Richard Roper, let me give you what he gave. 1.5 out of 4 stars. He said, the so-called finale of Michael Myers' saga is stabbing metaphor, stabbing soap opera, stabbing marching band bullies, stabbing, and more stabbing.
He's for the stabbing.
He's wrong, though. That's not really what happens.
There's not enough stabbing?
That just tells me he probably didn't watch it. He probably had a screener, and then he wrote his review.
Yeah.
Because that's not what happens in the actual movie. I think this is the other important part to me, is it's actually a horror movie. I wouldn't consider Halloween Kills as a horror movie, but it's more of an action, I think. It has some horror elements to it, but nothing in there was very scary to me. Other than a couple of kills were like, oh my God. But in Halloween Ends, there was at least three moments where I'm like, that's scary.
There are a couple of set pieces in it. Yeah. I'd say the first 10 minutes or so after the credits, where we go back to Halloween night 1978.
Yep.
And we see some of the other things that happened that night. That's good classic horror movie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it does kind of get into action movie. We're going to go take down Michael Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine how that turns out.
Yeah, I would say go out and see Halloween Ends. Matter of fact, see it tonight or tomorrow night. See it before Halloween. I think you'll like it, Derek. I don't think you'll like it as much as I did, but I think you'll like it.
Can I get a free trial of Peacock and watch out? See, this is the other problem.
You don't have the Peacock?
This is the other... No, because we have every other streaming service known to mankind, and at a certain point, you have to say enough.
Say no to Peacock.
I
got Peacock for free. Well, it's $180 because I pay $180 for my cable.
Yeah,
I'm rich.
We don't have cable anymore, so, you know, we don't do any of those. Yeah, you know, we don't get the free bundles with anything. Like, I don't have an iPhone, so I don't get to watch Ted Lasso, which is the only way anybody watches Ted Lasso.
Or any Google videos.
Yeah, I watch everything on Google.
Yeah.
But
I think they've made it where you can't actually see other people's videos that they send them to you. They're different formats and different sizes.
One of the things that's happened in film criticism,
yep,
is they don't, and you bring this up with the Roper review, they don't actually go to the movies to watch the movie anymore.
Right. They get screeners and watch it at home.
I don't know that they even get screeners anymore. I know that one of the ways they do it now is you get a link.
Probably, yeah. That makes sense.
And you have
sense,
a limited amount of time to watch the video, and then it disappears.
Yeah.
So that way you don't have screeners. Screeners are a major contributor to piracy. So they don't want screeners going out as much as they can avoid it. So if you're sitting there on a computer watching a horror movie, we've had this conversation.
Yeah.
If you're sitting there watching a horror movie at home with all the lights on,
mm-hmm,
and a drink in your hand and snacks, and you're getting up and going to the refrigerator, you're not watching a horror movie.
If
you're in a dark theater with strangers.
That's right. That's the best way to watch it.
And the ever-present threat of COVID in the air.
Yes.
You're watching a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Rolling Stone gave it a positive review. Halloween Ends, best out of Green's Halloween trilogy, noting its interestingly complex tangle of emotions and fears, comparing it to the previous capably observed independent films. Yeah, it does feel like an independent. It feels like a good-sized budget independent film. And New York Times also said it's a movie less frantic and more intimate than its predecessor. I agree with that completely. One that unfolds with a morning finality. And Time Out also gave a positive review and gave it 3 stars and called it a pleasant surprise.
Nice.
So, yeah, there are good reviews that are out there for Halloween Ends. So, trust me, go see it. If you like horror movies, you'll like it.
You want to take this guy's word on horror movies because he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoyed it. And I would also say see Halloween Kills and throw in the first Halloween there, too.
Yeah.
The original Halloween.
I'd say the first one is more like a Friday night, have a few beers movie.
Yeah. The remake one. Yeah.
Just watch it so you know who's who and what's what. But honestly, you can go straight from the original Halloween to Halloween Kills and pretty much be up to date.
I actually want to add this to Halloween Ends. I'd watch it again. Halloween Kills, I wouldn't watch again. Halloween Ends, I'd watch again. That's my review. So B minus on Halloween Kills for me, and B plus for Halloween Ends.
The one other criticism I'd level at Kills is it ignores 2.
Yeah,
like Halloween 2 is not part of the continuity of that movie. And it,
Halloween Ends?
Halloween Kills ignores 2.
Ignores Halloween 2.
Yes.
Yeah, when she's in the it does.
And it's sort of that's still a story that's set in Haddonfield with Laurie Strode the night out on Halloween night. I should, the fact that they moved this one into the hospital.
The flaming cars, yeah.
Yeah, the fact they moved this one into the hospital and Laurie's in the hospital is of course calling back to that.
Yeah.
But it just seems to me that you should have left that as part of the continuity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they sort of, the premise of this reboot is that nothing after the first Halloween happened.
Yeah.
None of that exists. And it's kind of weird to have them in the hospital when you know 2 is in the hospital and we're not talking about 2 at all.
Yeah. I'm going to take a direct right turn here. Annabelle versus Chucky. Who would win?
Oh, Chucky all day long.
Yes. Annabelle and Chucky, why are they scary? Explain that one to me, Derek.
Chucky isn't. There's this category of horror movies. And I kind of touched on this when we were talking about Michael Myers versus firefighters.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to be scared. You're going to see people get chopped up.
Sure.
Right?
Okay.
And that's the realm that the Chucky movies pretty much operate in. It's bad taste cinema for people who want to slum it for a night.
I agree. I think the Conjuring movies are good.
Now, the Conjuring movies are more toward...
That's where the Annabelle came from.
Yeah, yeah. That's more toward horror.
Yes.
Those are meant to be horror movies.
I agree, yep.
I like the first... Every movie after Child's Play is just goofy fun.
Mm.
The first Child's Play actually hangs on a great story idea, which is the kid is the only one that knows the doll is possessed and killing people, and none of the adults believe the kid.
Right. But also right out of the Twilight Zone with Telly Savalas, right?
Yes.
The Living Doll.
Yeah.
One of the best Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah, it's a story that's been done, but it's done there and it's done well. And yeah. there's like the
and
whole,
there's a good amount of humor to it and a pretty good star of the movie.
At the time,
the female star.
Right. At the time yeah. that it came out, you've also got that 1980s angle of the parents just divorced, you moved into a new home, you know, we're going to get the doll for the kid as, you know, sort of a substitute for the father
mm-hmm.
who is no longer in the picture.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
And
yep.
everybody's freaked out about the divorce and the kid's acting up because he's freaked out about the divorce. No, the doll's possessed and it's killing people.
Right. Right.
So it's got a good, solid, dark comedy angle. It's not really a scary movie, whereas the Annabelle movies and the Conjuring movies are definitely about, we're going to scare the heck out of you.
Yeah.
The thing about the doll in that movie is the doll isn't really anything. It just happens to be the conduit for...
Right, a spirit or something like that.
For the spirits.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just take the doll and like throw it under the bed or something. I don't know. I've never been scared of dolls.
Can't you just throw it down that well from the ring and yeah. and be done with it?
Those Cabbage Patch dolls, those were scary to me. I mean, what kid looks like that? What yeah. baby comes out looking like that? That's what was scary to me. Everybody was buying those in like what, Christmas of 84 and 85? Like all these little kids are wandering around with these little alien babies.
I got them for my niece and nephew. Everybody,
did you really?
Everybody wanted one, yeah.
Yeah, they were like,
I had one
what
myself,
were they, like 50
actually.
Bucks?
No, they were like $20, I think. They were expensive, but they weren't like break the bank expensive.
Yeah.
The secondary market was where it got stupid.
Yeah.
Because people were selling them for like $1,000 and... This
ridiculous.
Nonsense goes on every Christmas. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to put a big props in there for Catherine Hicks, though. She's a great heroine in Child's Play.
Yeah.
And she makes the movie better. But I never understood why Chucky got all these other things afterwards. I'm like, ugh, what one of the stupidest Halloween or horror villains is Chucky. One of the stupidest.
But that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah.
You know,
you think so?
It's the best, some of the best horror movies. Some of the best slasher movies are movies that are just there to entertain you between the kills.
Yeah.
And when you go and see a Chucky movie, there's no pretense. It's a movie about a foul-mouthed little boy doll trying to become a human being and killing anything that gets in his path.
Yeah.
And it's just stupid, wacky, goofy fun. It's horror comedy.
Yeah.
It's not and it's lowbrow horror comedy. So it's you know, it... It's a Friday Night Fright. It's a movie that you watch with a couple of beers.
Sure.
And you can throw that movie on in the middle of your Halloween movie marathon when you want a break from the stuff that's legitimately scary
yeah.
or legitimately interesting.
That's true. Like, it's one of the midnight movies, except it's not, should I say, horrible enough to be a midnight movie. It's mild midnight.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's goofy and it's silly, but it's still very much an R-rated movie. A midnight movie has to be an X-rated movie.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with that.
You got to have swears. You got to have gratuitous, over-the-top, crazy violence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, that's the midnight movie.
And down the road, the Child's Play movies got more and more into that.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely escalated as it went on. When we talk about The Conjuring and Annabelle and all the rest of this, those movies are so interchangeable for me.
Yeah.
Because they have one gimmick, which is a jump scare that comes from some direction that you're not expecting.
Yeah.
Found footage and all the rest of this nonsense. It just doesn't work. Once you've seen one of them, you don't need to see any more of them.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Saw kind of gets into that because with the Saw movies...
First Saw is pretty good.
The first Saw is pretty good.
Yeah.
But... At a certain point, they started making it this continuing story.
Yeah.
And you've got all
these... They just kept sawing.
You got all these agents, you know, FBI agents or whatever they're supposed to be running around all over the place. And their love stories and who's going to die. And, you know, it turned into like young adult fiction.
Yeah. Let me give you my top six favorite saws. You ready? The hand saw, a band saw, a bow saw, circular saw. A reciprocating saw, and finally a band saw. That would be my favorite.
You're missing the keyhole saw. You can do a lot of damage with
that's
the keyhole saw.
That's true, too, yeah.
Keyhole saw, because it's got that pointy tip, and you can just start getting in there. And
those are our top seven saws for 2022.
Cutting some flesh, yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you what I got here for the fright. Do you want to do everyday horrors? Do you have any?
Yeah, I do, but I don't think anybody wants to hear about it.
We'll
watched somebody die last Friday.
Oh my God!
You know,
no, I want to hear about this. That's horrible.
That's horrible.
That's horrible. This isn't everyday horrible. This is saying goodbye to somebody.
This is like my brother-in-law was diagnosed with cancer back in the spring, and we all thought that it was going to be, you know, a year, maybe, you know, that he'd at least have a year left. It turned very aggressive, and he passed away on Friday.
I'm sorry. That sucks.
And
that's horrible.
You know, I was there. I wasn't there at the moment that he passed. I was there, you know, about an hour or so before he passed. And, you know, those of you who've been through it know it is not always the image of someone lying back in a bed, you know, and opening their eyes and taking their last breath and smiling, you know, as the angels come down is not the reality at all.
I've never seen anybody die. That's horrible. I'm sorry you went through that. Yeah. I would not say that's an everyday horror. That's the second to the ultimate horror of possibly probably your own death and then seeing somebody that you're close to die. So I'm sorry you had to go through that.
It's awful. I do not mean to make light of it. It just the topic is what it is. He was an amazing guy, and I have a little boy because of him, because I met my wife while we were both working for him. And he was a huge part of my family and a huge part of my life. And it's what you realize when a family member dies, more so than people who you're when people who are close to you die, when your friends die, it's sad and there's loss and there's all that that goes through it. When a family member dies, your world gets a little bit smaller.
Sure.
You know, and as you get older, you feel that getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and ultimately we are the ones, you know, hopefully creating the next generation and making that part of things bigger. But it's, you know, it's tough. He was Steven Pizzera. He ran La Patisserie over in Winchester. He dedicated his life to making that bakery work, to promoting small businesses, to promoting local businesses. Go visit a local retailer this weekend. Go into your neighborhood bakery and pick something up.
Get a nice Halloween cake or some cookies or something like that.
Yeah. Don't go to the supermarket. Go find a bakery. Go get some cookies. Go get a cake. Go get something that somebody who does that for a living made. And I'm nothing against the supermarket bakeries, but you're part of a supermarket.
You know,
and there's a lot of things going on in the supermarket. There are great bakers over there.
Yeah.
But the local bakery is a vanishing business.
I agree.
And the ones that are surviving and thriving only do so as long as people keep coming through the doors.
Give me a couple of your favorite pastries.
I am a sucker for an eclair.
Nice. I love an eclair.
Eclair is a good pastry. Fruit tarts.
Fruit tart, okay.
Fruit tarts are very, very nice. Petit fours.
What is a petit four?
So a petit four.
It sounds like something for my feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The word is French. It's petites fours if you
nice.
If you do it phonetically. A petit four is about the size of a bonbon.
Nice.
And it is covered,
I like it already.
Covered in a chocolate or coating, mm-hmm. some kind of shell.
Yep.
Inside, there are layers of cake alternating with layers of fruit or whipped filling or what have you.
Sure.
They're magnificent. They're very, very difficult to make.
Petit four.
And people who can make them well should be treasured.
Mm-hmm. Get a pedicure and have a petit four during your pedicure.
It's like imagine biting into a chocolate and you're like, oh, there's a layer cake in here.
Yeah.
That's a petit four.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Fantastic.
They have Christmas petit fours at the Swiss Colony, it says.
Yeah, don't get the Swiss Colony petit fours.
No.
There's a company in San Francisco called Divine Delights. She makes amazing petit fours.
Very nice.
And I believe you can find them at La Patisserie in Winchester if you're looking for good petit fours.
Very good.
I think they, last time I was in there, I didn't check that part of the case. Usually they have them. And around the holidays, they usually have them.
Yeah. That's an ultimate horror, though. I can't top that one this week, Derek. There's nothing to try to even top there. It just made me sad.
So I'll give you a more everyday one, which is walking through the lobby of a hospital.
Yeah.
And in the distance, you hear someone hacking up a lung.
Ooh.
And you're like,
ooh.
I don't want to be in here.
Ooh. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm wearing my, here's a.
You know what? You could just go with the cough. Remember how crazy people go when with, you know, the 6-foot rule, and then people would just go to, you know, sniffle or something, and people would look like they were going to murder them.
Yeah, everybody jumps. I'm like, yeah. What are you doing out here?
Yeah, still an everyday horror.
It's a hospital. People are coughing, but your mind immediately goes to, oh, it's the thing. I walk into the hospital, which shall remain nameless. They provided great, 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 great care for my brother-in-law, but I think they're all doing this. I have N95 masks, and I know how to wear them.
Uh-huh.
You walk into the hospital, and they immediately have the sign, wear our mask over your own.
Yeah.
And they give you this flimsy little surgical thing.
Yellow or blue.
Yeah. They give you this flimsy little surgical thing, which the CDC has said does nothing, and you shouldn't even be wearing. So I'm wearing that over my N95.
Right.
Because if I'm just walking around my N95, they're going to be like, you're not wearing our mask.
Uh-huh.
When what I really want to say is, your mask is crap, but I understand why they're doing it.
Most people aren't doing that anymore. Because some people are, but not really. Nobody's really calling people out anymore.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Well,
they know they'll get thumped now.
Yeah. Now what's the point?
Yeah.
You know? But I understand why the hospital does it, because even if you come in wearing a mask, you might not know how to wear the mask. You might not have the right kind of mask. The mask might have holes in it.
Yep.
You might have been wearing the mask for 3 weeks. You know, I walk out the door with a fresh N95 most days.
Know what I want? A Rocky Dennis mask. You remember that movie?
Yes.
With Cher? That was kind of a horror movie. He looked like a lion.
Pretty much any movie with Cher in it could be considered a horror movie.
Yeah. Well, he was also a wonderful man. That was the whole thing about that movie. He's like the Elephant Man, except he was Rocky Dennis. And it was a true story. A good movie. It was on HBO like 4 times every day. My everyday horror this week was just kids and how much they suck lately. So, I mean, I was just thinking, and then I'm like, no, what the horror is... I was talking to a couple of friends, and again, you can't say names on this one, but I have friends that like they just don't like their kids, and it's like you get to the point where it's like, wow, it's like you don't like your kids.
How do you not like your kids?
Well, some of them they won't necessarily say they don't like their kids, but you know, just like what happens and how they talk about them, you're like, no, they don't like their kids, or they'll prefer one very much over another one.
Yeah, I believe that happens a lot in families.
And it's kind of sad. It's kind of an everyday horror. And I mean, I didn't have any kids, but it's like I see, and you know, I can also do this in the family. It's like over the years, you have very good relationships with some people and not so good relationships. And then there's others that are kind of rocky. Like, okay, you talk to them for a few years and everything's fine. And then you don't talk to them anymore. And then things go south for a while and then they're okay again. It's just different parts of life, I guess. And just some people are very good with babies. Some people are very good with toddlers, teenagers. Others are horrible with adults.
Yeah.
You know, so, but at some point, it's very sad to see people having kids and then not liking them. And you can understand the whole horror of I have horrible parents.
Yeah.
But imagine being a parent and hating your kid, which brings me to a great movie called The Babadook. Do you remember The Babadook?
I have actually not seen The Babadook. Oh,
it's about a woman who hates her kid. It's great. It's great. And she gets him a book. They find this book. And if you say the Babadook's name, the Babadook comes. And the Babadook's pretty scary. I believe it's a New Zealand movie, but it came out a number of years ago. I'll get the exact things on it. I wanted to put my everyday horror out there and then add that little thing this weekend. If you haven't seen the Babadook, it's another one that I think was one of the best that I've seen in the last like 10 years. It's 2014. It's a psychological horror film written and directed by a woman named Jennifer Kent in her directorial debut. She ended up doing this as like a short film and then got the money together and she ended up making this movie, and it premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2014. And I thought it was just great. It's a great little horror movie. Small budget, made some money back. 94 minutes, you know, nice little pace for a horror movie. You know, you got your two central characters, and it goes back and forth on, you know, what's going to happen between the boy and the mom. And it's really, really cool to see it. And it's a love story, too. It's a hate story and a love story. It's pretty good, the way that it goes back and forth. I really liked it.
My resistance to that film and my resistance to a great deal of horror movies is that they're no longer content to be horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to make the horror movie now, because horror movies are bad, right? Let's remember that we start with this.
It's funny, people say that, but they've never been completely, they haven't been obliterated yet, and they still do really well.
But horror movies are bad, and they're bad for you, and oh, we need to be more socially conscious.
If you listen to the second grade teacher who doesn't watch horror movies, yes.
Or the people who complain at Hollywood all the time. So if we're going to make a horror movie, it has to be about something. It has to be about interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
And it has to be our relationship with each other and how, you know, need to elevate people. And as soon as I see that, and that was my resistance to the Babadook, is because I knew that aspect of the story. As soon as I see that intruding into a horror movie, I immediately put it on the watch later list. Because somebody out there is just throwing blood and guts on the screen. And that's what I'm here for.
Now, I think the thing is, though, is since I think it's also because it was a small budget movie, there's very few characters in it.
Yeah.
And it's such a short runtime. It's 94 minutes. You care about these characters, which you don't really see. Like in Halloween Kills, they introduce you to a whole bunch of people. And some of them make it, some of them don't. The surprise is the ones that, you know, actually survive, I guess. But, you know, in a film like The Babadook, you actually learn about these characters and you're like, well, what the hell are they going to do?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's actually, I think the relationship with them is secondary.
But
it's still a very good horror movie.
But if I want a character-driven story, I'm going to go see something like Come Hell or High Water or
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Three Billboards Outside Epping, Missouri.
Sure.
You know, great, great, great character-driven stories. I love them.
Yeah.
When I want horror, I want blood and guts flying around the screen and goofiness. And if the acting is good, or maybe you've got some interesting, like, scary concept to throw into the movie, I'm on board with that. When it starts becoming, we're going to survive this horror and it's going to make us stronger as a family, I'm checked out. I'm checked out.
They kind of do that in Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends, though. They do.
Yeah, they kind of do. Yeah. But
That's pretty much what the whole thing is now. Everything's a family.
And that's the problem. And the thing about Halloween Kills is it does start going down that road, but it knows when to stop.
Yeah.
You know, it's not ultimately
There's a familiarity with one another versus a family.
It's not it's not ultimately about girl power or we're going to be stronger because we defeated Michael. It actually plays right against some of those stereotypes.
Yeah.
In the climax of the film, it just, to me, doesn't belong in a horror. I don't need a zombie love story. I don't need a vampire love story.
No.
I don't need, the horrible thing and we're going to find each other and we're going to be together again. Tell that story through some different lens, please.
Yeah. All right.
Make it a comedy. Make it a drama. Make it whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's not a horror movie for me if you're doing that. I go to a horror movie to be scared and see the blood flow.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. It's a Real Horror Show with Chris Earle and Derek Gary. We are here with you until 7 p.m. We've been talking about mostly Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends and Babadook and a couple of other horrors along the way, life horrors. What about these leaves falling everywhere? Leaves dying, that always happens in the fall. And we've gotten lucky, I think, this month. It hasn't been cold. It was a great, great October.
I think
that's one of the wonderful things about this past October. It has to be the warmest October I ever remember.
Other than the last couple of days of gloom, it has been has been pretty nice overall. Yeah. We got to get a PSA up in this, John.
I did one right at the beginning, but we can do one more.
We'll wait until after the top. Yeah, no, it's been a beautiful fall. We're hitting peak foliage around here right now.
Yeah,
and it's great driving around, seeing like the big splashes of yellow on the trees and on the ground, and horrifying to think that I've got to go wield the leaf blower for the next month.
Yeah,
as I deal with the maple trees.
How about a PSA about heroin? I always like this one.
Oh, heroin's good.
Yeah.
Someday a friend may offer you a chance to visit the other side of a dream. Your ticket is a little packet of white powder called heroin. But every packet of heroin is different. You don't know what's getting into you. Some doses are so strong they kill. Heroin is so vicious that the criminals who make the big money in heroin don't use it. They know a lot of reasons why heroin is very, very dumb. Maybe that's why they call it dope.
91.5 WMFO Medford.